This episode of Metatrex is brought to you by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
There's no greater challenge than the study of philosophy.
My philosophy is that there is room for all philosophies on this station.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 59 of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. My name is Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, is my friend, co-host, and fellow insubordinate, Mike Morrison. Today, we'll be talking about the ethics of disobeying orders in Star Trek. Mike, are you feeling particularly insubordinate? You ready to break a few rules together today?
Well, Zachary, we have broken rules, and here we sit in the brig of the Starship of Theseus, and I gotta say, it's kind of tight quarters in here, man. Well, at least we're not like Tom Paris spending 30 days.
Yeah, we only get to be in the brig for an hour or two at a time. You know? Poor Tom Paris, he gets 30 days.
30 days in the brig, that's right.
Well, like we mentioned a second ago, we're going to talk about disobeying orders in the Star Trek universe today. And I should say a word about why we chose this particular topic. As we were thinking about a topic for today's episode, I was reflecting on current events. And I don't often do this. I try to be relatively apolitical. But I was thinking recently of the incident where the acting attorney general, Sally Yates, was fired for disobeying or refusing to enforce Donald Trump's travel ban. And again, this isn't a show about politics. We're not going to dwell on that. I don't even have a deep opinion on this. But it got me thinking about disobeying orders inside the Star Trek universe and when disobeying orders is morally justified, when it's not morally justified because of your obligation or your implicit or tacit agreement to abide by a command structure. It occurred to me, Mike, that there are a lot of instances of rule breaking inside the Star Trek universe that we haven't talked about before.
There are, Zachary. And frankly, I am shocked at the number of instances inside of Star Trek where we see either a captain or one of the captain's subordinates breaking rules or disobeying orders in order to achieve, you know, a particular goal. And the examples are literally from every iteration of Star Trek, including the movies. And we've got so much to kind of tear into today. I almost feel like we need to jump into it, but I'm cautious because I'm the one wearing the red shirt. Our listeners can't see us, but you are wearing a blue polo. I am wearing a red polo. So it's obvious to me that going on this away mission, which one of us is going to die? It's going to be me. So I'm going to be very cautious about breaking any orders or disobeying the rules.
Well, you mentioned that there are so many instances of rule breaking or insubordination in Star Trek, but that's what happens when you have a fleet full of badmirals, isn't it?
Well, it seems like that is most often the case that we get. We have a badmiral who has made a bad call or perhaps is issuing orders based on an agenda that is truly contrary to Starfleet's principles. And so, you know, the captain is put in a place where do I obey the order that's been given or do I uphold Starfleet's principles? And so that's the example that we get probably most often, but that's not always the case.
Well, I think there's something in human nature. We like rule breakers. We like people who are individuals mm-hmm. and don't conform to the norm in one way or another. So seeing a starship captain break the rules, defy the badmiral, or a subordinate, you know, break a rule that he or she doesn't agree with, you know, we tend to champion those individuals. And I think that's part of our rugged individualism here in the United States. We like the people who are willing to break the rules for a cause.
Yeah, and we think about famous rule breakers in Star Trek. Captain Kirk, I think, comes to mind immediately. I think he's probably the most prolific rule breaker. He is most often disobedient to his orders, and somehow he's able to get by with it. But within Starfleet are lots of examples of rule breaking and rule breakers. I think of Bad Boy, for instance, Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. When we first meet Tom, he's spending time in a penal colony because he just can't follow the rules. He obviously has issues with orders and authority. B'Elanna Torres, also from Voyager, also seems to have some issues with following rules. We get examples in Star Trek The Next Generation. Even Captain Picard from time to time becomes a rule breaker. He defies orders in Deep Space Nine. We see examples of disobedient Starfleet personnel within the Deep Space Nine universe, Commander Sisko, Captain Sisko being one of them. So literally in every iteration of Star Trek, even on Enterprise, we have examples. Lieutenant Reed, for instance, Malcolm Reed has big problems, especially in season 4 of Enterprise with following orders.
As you were listing these different examples, it occurred to me that one of my favorite scenes in all of Star Trek, out of all the series and all the movies, is the scene in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when Captain Kirk defies the Admiral's orders not to take the Enterprise back to the Genesis planet. And he gets this twinkle in his eye, and the Admiral's saying, you know, you hear what I'm saying, I can't let you do this, and blah, blah, blah. And Captain Kirk gets this twinkle in his eye, and you know he's going to defy that order. He walks away and says, you know, the answer is no, therefore I'm going anyway. And that's one of my favorite moments. It almost defines the entire character of Captain Kirk to me. As I think about these different examples of rule breaking or defying orders inside the Star Trek universe, what's interesting to me is the different varieties of rule breaking. I mean, it's not like people disobey rules or break orders for the same reason. Sometimes it's done out of friendship and loyalty. And I think that's what's happening in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when Captain Kirk, you know, steals the Enterprise to go search for Spock. He's doing it out of friendship and loyalty mainly. Sometimes it's done out of moral conviction. If you think that an order is immoral for some way, we see Captain Picard doing this a lot. And he does it in Star Trek Insurrection to protect the Baku. He does it a couple of times in Star Trek The Next Generation when he thinks that orders from on high are violating the Prime Directive or going to be harmful to some society. We see Captain Picard breaking a lot of rules. Sometimes it's done out of conflicting loyalty, like you've got a loyalty to your immediate commanding officer and you have a loyalty to the hierarchy and to the Federation and to Starfleet. And sometimes these loyalties conflict with each other. And in order to honor one loyalty, you have to end up violating another loyalty that you have. So philosophically, it makes me wonder, are some of these justifications for being insubordinate or defying orders more morally acceptable than others? Can we lump them all together? Do we need to make important distinctions? And what do we think about the different philosophical justifications for being bound to your orders and to the chain of command versus following your own moral convictions, even if that means violating your direct orders?
Yeah, I'd sort of like to pick up with the conflicting loyalties and honoring treaties, because I think that's really interesting. And we see that a couple of times in the Star Trek universe. I know one of the examples that you cited would have been Riker's disobeying Pressman's orders in the episode The Pegasus from Star Trek The Next Generation. But we actually have a couple of examples of this in Star Trek. We have another great example from Star Trek The Next Generation. I can think of an example from Enterprise with Malcolm Reed in the 4th season of Enterprise. He has conflicting orders. He's got conflicting loyalties, a loyalty to Section 31 and a loyalty to Captain Archer. And he is so conflicted in this episode, and I think as an actor, I think he played this very well. You can see the turmoil and you can see the conflict written all over his face, and it was so well written. His actions, you know, he's trying very hard to kind of walk the fence, but you know, he suddenly discovers that you can't straddle the fence when it comes to Captain Archer, and Archer ends up throwing him in the brig. And you know, so he is sitting there trying to decide, you know, okay, do I defy my loyalty to Section 31 for my captain? And at the end of the episode, certainly this is Divergence I'm talking about from season 4, I believe episode 16. He ends up at the end of the episode deciding that his first loyalty has to be to his captain if he's going to be his armory officer on the Enterprise. But he didn't come to that decision easily, and it caused him a great deal of pain and embarrassment.
And poor Malcolm, you can really feel for the guy. He didn't even have a holodeck to go to sort it all out.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, at least Riker was able to go to the holodeck and pull up a program that really had nothing to do with the conflict that he was having and, you know, somehow walk out with an epiphany that he is going to be loyal to his captain.
And I think conflicting loyalties is probably the most difficult situation to sort out philosophically, because it's not like in breaking a rule, you're trying to be immoral, you're trying to violate the chain of command, or you're trying to do badly. You really have, you know, two conflicting loyalties that in your mind are both positive. They both are good, genuine moral obligations, and they seem to conflict with each other. But in honoring one, you end up violating the other, and you end up, it causes this internal moral conflict that I think is very difficult to sort through. I think that's probably even more difficult than, say, Kirk stealing the Enterprise to go search for Spock, right? There's no real moral conflict there. That's a clear case of one loyalty trumping another in Captain Kirk's mind. But if you have conflicting loyalties in the sense of orders that seem to conflict, where if you honor one, you end up violating the other or committing some act that isn't moral for some reason. That's a really difficult situation to sort out, because it's not like there's a clear case where one loyalty trumps another. And I think that's what's going on there with Malcolm. With Kirk, he's like, there's no question. He's going to go after Spock. If that means sacrificing his career, you know, loyalty to the chain of command be damned, so to speak.
Well, I think there's another really great example in Star Trek The Next Generation of an officer who struggles with conflicting loyalties. In fact, it seems to be a recurring theme in this particular officer's life, and we see this in the episode that bears her name, and that is Ensign Ro. Now, when we meet Ensign Ro, she's been court-martialed for disobeying orders, but Admiral Kennedy has pardoned her and has given her an assignment. But, Zachary, that assignment is not fully disclosed to Captain Picard. And so she is given orders by Admiral Kennedy, and she reports to Captain Picard. And because he doesn't have the full story, his orders contradict Admiral Kennedy's, and she's forced to choose loyalties. Now, again, you know, at the end of the day, she's able to find her moral compass, but she repeats this pattern of behavior later on, and it ultimately ends in her leaving Starfleet and joining the Maquis.
I think it's important to ask why this is even an issue, right? If it's a clear case of a captain's orders versus an admiral's orders, why isn't the obvious answer the right answer, that the admiral's orders just outrank the captain's orders? And so there's no conflict there. I mean, the whole idea of a chain of command is that, you know, the higher ranking command outranks the lower ranking command. So if there's a case of seeming conflict between two different levels of command, the higher one always wins. So why does this bother us so much, do you think?
I think oftentimes there is moral conflict built into that because, and again, we see examples of this in Star Trek, oftentimes these orders are issued in secret. They're issued covertly in order to cover up some kind of moral discrepancy. And so when these issues surface and the conflict arises within the episode, it is a simple case of, you know, do I follow the order even though there are moral objections that I have, or, you know, moral objections that are clear, that are in conflict with Starfleet's principles, or, you know, do I do the right thing and defy the order? So I think most often when we see these conflicting loyalty, we can point back to some type of moral conviction or moral issue, moral conflict that is within that order that's been given.
That's a really interesting point. Like many things that don't see the light of day, the fact that these orders from on high, from the admirals, mm-hmm. so to speak, are secretive orders that aren't given in public, out in the open, aren't given with the consent or the knowledge of a lower ranking captain, for example. That oftentimes means there's something morally questionable about those orders. There's a reason that they're secretive and not seeing the light of day. And it's not just a matter of like Federation security, right? They're trying to pull something that is not living up to the letter of the law. And that's why those orders are given oftentimes in secret. So yeah, that's a really interesting point. The fact that the secretiveness of some of these orders adds to the moral conflict, because there's the implication is that there's a moral problem with the orders from the higher ranking officer.
And that's the problem Malcolm has in Divergence, because the orders that he has been given were given to him from Section 31. And okay, we're going to kind of step out of universe and all come into agreement that usually when Section 31 is involved, you know, there are some questionable things happening in the episode. And so Section 31's objective is to stabilize relations with the Klingons. Captain Archer, on the other hand, cares only about the safety of his medical officer, Phlox, who has been kidnapped and being held against his will and forced to work out this medical experiment in the Klingon Empire. And so Malcolm's conflict there goes back to this kind of moral conviction. You know, he sees, and the thing about Malcolm, he sees that what Section 31 is trying to accomplish here is not necessarily a bad thing, but at the end of the day, what comes first? You know, are we going to break our treaties? Or are we going to do something that could potentially backfire on us and cause, you know, out and out war within the within the galaxy? Or, you know, am I going to be loyal to my friend, our medical officer, and my captain? And that's the dilemma that Malcolm finds himself in. It's very complicated. We can easily call it conflicting loyalties, but again, this kind of points back to that moral question there that he has to ask and answer.
You're hitting on something that is really interesting to me philosophically, because I think it speaks to the heart of the role that rules play. And the question that I have in mind is whether a chain of command, following rules, following orders, mm-hmm. respecting the chain of command, whether that has intrinsic value or whether it has merely pragmatic value. If respecting the chain of command has intrinsic value, like there's something intrinsically morally correct about following orders, following rules, following the expertise and the experience of the people who outrank you, if that's imbued with moral force, then obviously if you're violating the rules, there's something morally problematic with that. You're being somewhat immoral or unethical if you're breaking the rules, if those rules have moral force on their own. And I think that's kind of the Kantian position, right? So, you know, Kant, who thinks that there are intrinsic rights and intrinsic wrongs, if it's intrinsically right to respect the chain of command, then obviously if you're not respecting the chain of command, then you're doing something immoral, kind of by definition. But for Kant, he would sort of say, look, you know, the whole point of a chain of command is to respect the chain of command. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't have a chain of command, if every time someone gave an order, you know, the subordinates were free to violate the orders and do whatever they wanted, that would undermine the entire purpose of a chain of command. So there's something just logically inconsistent about a chain of command that isn't enforceable in that way, right? And I think this is the heart of what's going on at the end of Star Trek IV, when Admiral Kirk is being demoted back to Captain Kirk. He gets a gentle reminder that discipline is an important part of any chain of command. The whole concept of a chain of command would be undermined if subordinates had the authority to disregard the orders from their superiors. So there's something intrinsically valuable in that view about respecting the chain of command, trusting the expertise of the people above you and being willing to follow their orders, even when you disagree with them. And I think that speaks to the discipline of any sort of military organization, right? You can't have a military organization if you're not willing to do what your superior officers tell you to do most or all of the time, right? So you need that structure. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you could argue that, look, the whole point of a chain of command is to achieve certain pragmatic goals, to achieve order, to achieve certain political goals, to achieve certain military goals, to achieve a certain social stability in the order of things that we see in Federation society. So there's not, and on that view, there's nothing sort of intrinsically valuable about following the rules. The rules are valuable insofar as they promote those goals. And if it turns out that orders from on high don't promote those goals, if there's nothing intrinsically valuable about the goals other than those pragmatic ends, then you're not violating any moral code in breaking the rules. You should be more free to follow your convictions in that state of affairs. The unfortunate consequence is that can lead to chaos. It can lead to conflict. It can lead to internal moral strife and all of these these situations that we've been describing. But to me, it seems to boil down to a question of whether following rules or respecting the chain of command has intrinsic value or merely pragmatic value.
And Zachary, it occurs to me that most often than not, I think Star Trek errs on the side of pragmatism in this case. I think most often we see the position of the overall episode in which we see these kind of conflicts occur, leaning towards this idea that the rules are there and they're good insofar as, you know, they promote the kind of values that we feel is important. But at the end of the day, we see example after example after example of the rules getting thrown out the window. For instance, Data says in First Contact, as Captain Picard is getting ready to take the Enterprise into the conflict in the Sol system, the Borg has launched an offensive against Earth, and they have ordered the Enterprise to stay out of it. And to me, that doesn't seem to make sense. I think anyone who was in a movie theater or at home watching on Blu-ray the movie First Contact, I think you're going to feel like, okay, that's not right. This is one of the most powerful ships in the fleet. It's got one of the most seasoned crew in the fleet. Let's put them in the thick of the action. That's going to give us the best possible outcome. But no, they've got them out there. They're just going to do some routine patrol while it's going down there near Earth. And so, you know, Captain Picard's listening to the transmissions coming in. It's clear that the Federation is not faring well in this battle. And he turns to his crew and he says, okay, I am getting ready to, I'm getting ready to break the rules. We're not following the orders. I'm going to take this ship and we're going to go into the battle. And, you know, if you want to object, I'll note it in my log. Data turns around and he says, sir, I believe I speak for the entire crew when I say to hell with our orders. One of the best Data lines in all of Star Trek. But I think that really, at the end of the day, Zachary, is the sentiment of Star Trek.
But you know what's missing from that scene, Mike, is one of those classic Picard speeches. I mean, Picard often reminds us that following orders blindly has led to tragedy after tragedy. Mm-hmm. And Starfleet doesn't want people who blindly follow orders. Starfleet wants people who can analyze the situation at hand and make the best judgment call or make the best decisions based on the information at hand. So even Captain Picard would say that you don't blindly follow orders. And but although, you know, the irony is if someone directly contradicts Captain Picard's orders, he doesn't like it one bit.
No, indeed. And, you know, he didn't have time for a speech. Yeah, I think a drumhead style speech would have been perfect, but there just wasn't time because Worf had given the order for ramming speed. So, you know, if Worf is going to make it into the next couple of movies, they had to get there and save his bacon before he decided to take the Defiant in to that Borg cube. But I think that this kind of pragmatic view is the most consistent point of view of Star Trek. Now, that being said, Spock, most often than probably any other character, perhaps Data, but Spock is one of these characters who, as he is making a decision, as he is trying to decide what course of action is best for Kirk and the Enterprise to take, he often gives speeches, quotes regulation. There's a very methodical, very thoughtful process that he uses when he's coming to these decisions. And so that kind of gives me this idea that he values intrinsically these rules and these regulations. But Spock has also been known to defy orders and to break rules. And we see this, I think, first and foremost in the Menagerie from the original series. I mean, he's kidnapped Captain Pike. He has commandeered the Enterprise, and he is headed to a planet that is so taboo that there is a death penalty for anyone who enters that system. So he's not just going to break a rule or disobey an order. He is going to commit a capital offense. But he does this to save his friend, Captain Pike. And so when Captain Kirk does similarly in Star Trek III, I think he I think he learned that from our resident Vulcan.
I think the nice thing about this pragmatic approach to the chain of command versus imbuing the chain of command with some sort of moral bindingness, that the chain of command is intrinsically valuable. And so if that's the position, then taking the high ground, like, look, you violated an order, so you're just in the wrong, is the right thing to do. If it's really cut and dry if the chain of command has intrinsic value. But if you back off on that just a little bit and you just say that it has mostly pragmatic value, that allows you to say, well, most of the time, maybe even the vast majority of the time, respecting the chain of command keeps order, ensures political stability, ensures military superiority, all these various pragmatic goals. So, you know, 9 times out of 10, that respecting the chain of command is going to achieve those pragmatic goals. That gives the rule breaker, the, you know, 1 time out of 10 or 1 time out of 100, the license to say, no, it doesn't. This time, the situation is different, and the chain of command is actually not going to achieve the goals that we all share. Unfortunately, what I think it does is undermine the higher ranking officers, whether it's the captain or the admiral or even the Federation Council. It undermines their ability to look down the chain of command and say, look, I'm in charge. I'm the superior officer. You need to follow my orders and you need to trust that I have the right perspective on this because I'm the superior officer. If the chain of command itself is merely pragmatic, the higher ranking officers seem to have no leg to stand on other than a pragmatic leg to say, following my orders is actually the most pragmatic approach here. It sort of removes the moral force of their argument for maintaining the chain of command and having their subordinates follow their orders all the time.
And actually, Zachary, we discover in Voyager episode Equinox that there is a Starfleet regulation. It is Regulation 3, Paragraph 12, that authorizes captains to take any justifiable action to preserve the lives of their crew when threatened with imminent destruction. So I think that's very interesting because it almost seems like a nice, tidy little excuse when the need arises to break the rules. For instance, Spock in the Menagerie. At the end of that two-part episode, he's pardoned. You know, Starfleet Command has been able to see these transmissions. They now see that, you know, Spock was doing something that, was morally acceptable, and they pardon him. Kirk in A Mock Time does something similarly. Spock is undergoing the Ponfar, and Kirk has been ordered by the Admiral to go to Altair 6. And so what does he do? Well, he forgets all about Altair 6. He's going to do what he feels is necessary to take care of his friend. Spock needs to go home and put on his Barry White and do some romancing. And so, you know, Kirk totally gets that. You know, I love how Kirk is willing to jeopardize his career so Spock can go home. And I don't know, is this regulation the reason that Kirk isn't court-martialed for that action? Because we never find out, as is usually the case, what the consequences were for defying these actions. I mean, again, we know Ensign Ro was court-martialed. We see Tom Paris spend 30 days in the brig, but there are examples of Starfleet officers, the EMH, for instance, in Flesh and Blood. Why was he never punished for defying orders? Was it Starfleet Regulation 3, Paragraph 12?
Well, I guess the question that's emerged in my mind as you've been describing this situation is that, look, if at rock bottom, Starfleet captains have the authority to do whatever is necessary when faced with imminent danger, doesn't that merely reduce the chain of command to, at best, a useful fiction? And if not, what is the explanation for giving the chain of command any additional justification beyond that?
Yeah, I think those are great questions. I'm not sure that there are easy answers to them.
I mean, we do have concepts, and I think maybe we're back in the realm of virtue ethics, like sometimes we end up. Mm-hmm. I think you can say that there are virtues in having a sense of honor, of duty, of loyalty, of meeting your commitments, doing what you say you're going to do, meeting your promises. And even if the chain of command is a social contract or a useful fiction where we all shake hands and say, okay, I agree that you're the captain, I agree to be the first officer, and the person below me agrees to be the second officer, and we have this whole chain of command that's all based on a handshake agreement. We all say we're going to abide by our ranks and treat each other with that level of respect. Even if that's a useful fiction, it's an awfully pragmatic one. And we do respect people who can shake hands that way and say, I know my place, you know yours, and we're going to have a good society, and we're going to build the kind of society we want to build, even if that means we imbue it with some sort of rank. I think there's a virtuousness in sticking to your commitments in that way, even if the chain of command is a handshake agreement.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think for Captain Kirk, though, in Amok Time, I think he took one look at Spock's lady friend there, and he's like, tonight is your night, bro. We're going to get you home. We're going to get you home. But again, it just, this idea of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one, as Spock would say. I mean, this flies in the face of that philosophy, because we are putting the needs of the one ahead of the needs of the many. In this case, Altair 6. In the menagerie, it was the entire crew of the Enterprise who was in jeopardy. I think of Sisko in the Dias cast. He's ordered not to go to the Gamma Quadrant. So what does he do? He defies that order. He enlists volunteers to go and save Odo. Why? Because he says, I'm not going to just abandon one of my officers. So once again, Zachary, we've defied the Badrimal. We are defying Badrimals here on Metatrax.
Well, one thing that's emerged out of this discussion so far is that we seem to be building some kind of a taxonomy, different types of being insubordinate, different types of rule breaking or defying the chain of command. One is out of friendship and loyalty. Another one is out of moral conviction. And then we've talked about conflicting loyalties, loyalty to your society versus loyalty to your commanding officer. Are there any others that we're missing, different varieties of rule breaking or disobeying orders besides those three? Those seem to be the main categories that came immediately to my mind, but I'm curious if we've missed any so far.
Well, Zachary, the only example that I can think of that probably isn't character-based, as far as, you know, Kirk trying to aid Spock or Spock aiding Kirk or you know, some configuration of that, Sisko and Odo, whatever the case may be, Picard and Earth, or Picard and Data in First Contact. You know, he stays aboard the Enterprise. Why? Because the Borg has abducted Data. He's going to go after his friend. And he tells Lily why? Because once upon a time, these people risked their lives and came after me. So we see lots of examples of that within the Star Trek universe. But there's actually an episode, and I believe the episode is The Siege, from Deep Space Nine Season 2, near the beginning of the season. Sisko is ordered to withdraw from Deep Space Nine because of political unrest on Bajor. And so the Circle is coming with military might. They have ordered all non-Bajorans to leave the station. Sisko's ordered to leave. He decides to stay. There really wasn't a reason in terms of, you know, helping a friend or something like that. It was an obligation, I think, that is to some degree ambiguous, other than he was going to hold on to that space station. He wasn't going to give it up so easily. He simply disagreed with Starfleet's position on this.
I think there's a couple ways to read this situation. One is that Captain Sisko sees certain ends. He sees a potential relationship with the Bajorans and all of its benefits. And if Starfleet is ignoring that by ordering him to abandon the station, then that seems to be a case of pragmatic disobeying of orders, mm-hmm. right? That the orders don't serve the pragmatic value that Captain Sisko sees in the relationship that he's building with the Bajorans. So that's one way of reading it.
And I think that's probably an excellent way of reading it.
Another way of reading it could be just plain old-fashioned stick-with-itness. Like, he's not going to abandon his station. Come hell or high water, he's commander of that station, and he's not going to see it torn to shreds. And there's something admirable about that, too, being willing to go down with a ship. There is this tradition of captains, or commanders in this case, but at that time period in Deep Space Nine, but there's a tradition of captains being willing to go down with a ship, that you're not going to leave your ship until every last person is off, and you know, unless that situation unfolds, you're going to be there to deal with whatever consequences unfold. So there's something admirable about that, even if it's not for any higher purpose, just that's part of the job of being a commander or being a captain.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of commander, I think that's the kind of captain that Sisko is, but I don't think that's the case. I know we see him in the Dominion War being forced to abandon Deep Space Nine to the Dominion. So I don't necessarily think it's just, you know, come hell or high water, you know, I'm going to hold this particular piece of real estate, or in this case, this particular space station out here, you know, deep in the Alpha Quadrant. But I think rather, based on the speech that he gives to his officers in the episode The Siege, he talks about the relationship that they've worked so hard to build with the Bajorans, that he values that friendship. He thinks it's serving a greater purpose. He's looking at it from a very personal level. He's talking about relationships that have been formed. He has one officer that's engaged to a Bajoran. And, you know, he brings up all of these kind of personal examples. And this becomes his reasoning for holding on to the space station, and how he's able to convince so many of his officers to stay behind and help him hold it. So I think your first explanation is probably the best explanation for why Sisko would want to hold on to the to Deep Space Nine and defy those orders.
And I think in that situation, Commander Sisko is every bit justified in saying, look, my superiors don't understand what it's like out here on the field. They haven't been getting to know the Bajorans. They haven't seen the relationships be built. They haven't seen the benefits. They don't see the potential that I see. So they're just plain wrong in ordering me to abandon the station. And again, I think the only justification that makes sense on is this pragmatic justification. If you can say, look, the whole reason for this chain of command is to achieve certain shared goals that we all share as a society. And if the orders conflict with those pragmatic goals, then the orders be damned. What matters is achieving the kind of society we want to achieve. And I think that has to be the position that Commander Sisko is taking in that situation.
And Zachary, it seems to me that Commander Sisko establishes himself as the kind of commander who can see the intrinsic values of regulation and principle. However, I think overall he's a very pragmatic captain, a pragmatic commander, pragmatic person. And we see him weighing these kind of moral decisions and oftentimes erring on the side of pragmatism. For instance, I'm thinking of the Deep Space Nine episode, Captive Pursuit. At the end of the episode, there is this debate about whether or not they are interfering in the development of another species, you know, their inner workings, and is this a prime directive issue? And so Tosk is supposed to be turned over to the Hunter, and O'Brien has built this relationship with him. He's not just going to let Tosk, you know, go to his death, a humiliating death at that. He's going to give Tosk a chance to live. And he's got a really great argument for this. I mean, he's giving the Hunters what they want, a great hunt. He's giving Tosk what Tosk wants, a chance to, you know, live another day and for the hunt. And he defies orders. He really screws with the station systems. And I love it near the end of the episode, Sisko has been made aware that, you know, O'Brien's gone off the rails, and Odo says, you know, I'm going to go intercept him. And you do that, Constable, you do that. And so Odo takes off, he's briskly walking, and Sisko says, you don't have to be in a hurry. So I think there's this establishment here with this particular character that he's going to be more pragmatic probably than he's going to be, just so intrinsically tied to regulation.
That was such a great example and such a great point. There's only one justifiable response to that. I am Tosk. No. No, seriously, Captain Sisko, by the end of Deep Space Nine, has to become pragmatic. He has seen the chain of command devolve into bureaucracy, mm-hmm. right? He's seen when a chain of command isn't efficient, isn't serving pragmatic value, it's actually interfering with their potential ability to win the war with the Dominion. So I think Captain Sisko, being in that unique position to see all the different factors and being on the front lines and having those direct experiences, allows him to say, look, chain of command be damned. We have to start taking action. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to lose this war. So, you know, you admirals and badmirals better get your act together, and we need to be proactive. And we see Captain Sisko doing some morally questionable things in the episode In the Pale Moonlight, all because he's taking the pragmatic position of saying that the ends are more important than the means to get there. And if that means, you know, taking morally questionable actions, if that means violating the chain of command, winning the War of the Dominion, and by extension, forming the relationship with the Bajorans and continuing that relationship, those are more important factors than the pragmatic value of the chain of command for its own sake.
I think that's a great example and a great point. You know, I have to ask, though, Zachary, when does the philosophy that the ends justify the means, when does that kind of go off the rails, so to speak, into anarchy, really? Because if you uphold that kind of philosophy, you really can kind of devolve into some type of anarchy. So it seems to me that the ends justify the means can be a rather dangerous sentiment. I kind of go back to, you know, Tom Paris spending 30 days in the brig. And we see the doctor, probably the EMH, do much more in terms of defying orders and you know, kind of setting aside regulation. And, I mean, he doesn't even really get a slap on the wrist for it.
This is where I think it's important to make a distinction between a philosophy of ends justifying the means and a pragmatic justification for a chain of command. Mm-hmm. Right. The ends justify the means says, you know, rules be damned, protocol be damned, chain of command be damned. I'm going to, you know, do whatever is necessary to achieve a certain goal. And it does lead to a more chaotic, more anarchistic kind of environment, I think. But if you say that, look, if we're going to adopt a pragmatic view that we all share certain goals, we can kind of enumerate what those are, political stability and military superiority and, you know, stable society, and all, you can kind of list these things out, right? If those are our goals, then we can say, look, within the Star Trek universe, in Starfleet in particular, more often than not, respecting the chain of command helps us meet those goals, right? So it's not doesn't lead to anarchy or chaos, because we can all recognize that respecting the chain of command leads to, more often than not, achieving most of those goals. But it does kind of give you this way out, that when the chain of command ceases to be pragmatically useful, you know, this one time out of 100, then you have some license to go pursue that alternative course for the sake of achieving those goals. But I think you can still kind of step back and say, you know, this isn't anarchy. This isn't ends justifies the means at all costs. This is the vast majority of the time, it's good to stick to the rules. It's good to stick to the chain of command that helps us meet our shared goals. But it gives you an out in these unique situations when the chain of command has ceased to have pragmatic value. I guess the question is, why doesn't that happen all the time, right? If you can do that once, why can't you do it 100 times or 1,000 times? Why doesn't that devolve into chaos? Because I think if collectively as a society, you know, in the Star Trek universe, in Starfleet, right? If members of Starfleet collectively recognize the value of a chain of command and its pragmatic value, then more often than not, people are going to stick to the chain of command in those ordinary day-to-day situations, unless there's a really unique situation or a really urgent crisis. And I think that's what we see inside the Star Trek universe. 9 times out of 10, sticking to the chain of command serves the pragmatic value and helps members of Starfleet and citizens of the Federation achieve all of their shared goals. But that one time out of 100, when there's a crisis or when there's a moral issue at play, then that gives those officers the pragmatic license to say, nope, in this particular case, the ends justify the means. Even if once the situation is over, I'm right back to my default of respecting the chain of command for pragmatic value.
And that kind of takes me back to a mock time in which Kirk is ordered to Altair 6. I mean, when you have a situation where you are ordered to go lend aid of one type or another. I mean, you know, obviously there's a situation on Altair 6 that requires the Enterprise, and lives could be at stake. You know, we see these different situations in which there's a, you know, some type of medical disaster or natural disaster, and the Enterprise has been ordered. We see this inside Star Trek, The Next Generation. The Enterprise has been ordered to go lend aid, but something happens. And just like in A Mock Time, a captain ends up defying those orders and putting the needs of a single officer ahead of tens of thousands, millions, perhaps lives. And, you know, I mistakenly said that Spock was a Barry White fan, and it occurs to me that I think he's more of a Kenny G kind of guy. But, you know, nevertheless, it seems to me like his romantic life is... I don't want to diminish the physical effects of Ponfar, but it seems to me that his romantic life is second to tens of thousands, millions of lives. Don't get me wrong. I hope that, you know, if I'm a science officer on a Starfleet vessel, that my captain would put my needs, whatever they may be, ahead of, you know, whatever. I appreciate the value that Captain Kirk puts in his friendship and you know, the value that intrinsically that his friend has to him.
Well, Mike, you are wearing the wrong color shirt in that red shirt if you think they're going to be respecting the value of your life.
Indeed.
You showed up in the wrong uniform today, buddy.
I knew I should have wore blue for this episode.
Well, Mike, to shift gears just a little bit, I think it's interesting to bring the tools of philosophy and the terminology and distinctions that happen in ethical discussions to bear on the situation. Because for me, the underlying question is, what is the justification for following rules? So what's the justification for the chain of command? Why do we view it with such reverence? Mm-hmm. And can we give any philosophical justification for that? And I think it's hard to do that with a final definitive answer. At best, I think we can give different varying philosophical justifications for it and kind of let the chips fall where they may. You know, people, I think, are going to have different opinions on this. I don't know myself of a way to reconcile this, but I think you can take different perspectives on rules and on a chain of command from different philosophical traditions. And I think it's useful at least to kind of lay out the field of options and see what comes of it. One option for me is one we've already mentioned, the Kantian perspective, mm-hmm. This idea that rule, it's morally right to follow rules. And if you don't follow rules, if it's that easy to violate the chain of command, if it's that easy to undermine the chain of command, then the whole idea of a hierarchy of a chain of command kind of collapses. It becomes a self-contradictory concept if it's okay or permissible for subordinates to break the rules. So this Kantian perspective basically says, look, it's intrinsically valuable to follow the rules. It's always wrong to you know, violate the orders of your superior officers.
Can I question that? Because Kant, who would...
No.
Because Kant, who would tell us that it is intrinsically right to follow the rules, would also say that if you see somebody in need, that you have a moral obligation to assist. So it seems to me that even within Kant's own philosophy, there's discrepancy.
Well, and I think that's one of the hardest things to reconcile on Kantian philosophy. It sure seems like we have, you know, cases where you have conflicting obligations, mm-hmm. and if it's always wrong to, you know, not meet up to your obligations in this case, these cases of conflicting obligations, it seems like you're going to let someone down all the time. There are going to be situations where no matter which action you take, you're doing something morally wrong. So conflicting loyalties, conflicting obligations, situations where it seems like in following one Kantian principle, you're violating another, is one of the hardest things to reconcile in Kantian philosophy.
So the conclusion is Immanuel Kant. Would probably make an incredible Starfleet captain because he'd just weigh the options and do what he thinks is best at the end of the episode. Because that really does sound like most Starfleet captains. I think that there is a value that they place in the rules. There's an intrinsic value to the, you know, with the rules, but you know, at the end of the day, they're going to have to do what they think is morally justifiable.
Yeah, and I think something like the Prime Directive is a good example. Like, you know, the Prime Directive is viewed with such reverence inside the Star Trek universe, you could call it a Kantian principle, mm-hmm. right? This is a rule you just plain don't violate. It's always wrong to violate the Prime Directive, regardless of the consequences, regardless of what orders you're given. That's just something they view with that kind of Kantian moral universality, right? So that's one approach, is to view the chain of command with that kind of rigidity. Another approach would be we kind of called it the pragmatic approach. You could call it a social contract approach, mm-hmm. where, you know, we jointly agree to this useful fiction of this hierarchy for the sake of meeting certain shared goals, right? It's a social contract, or it's a pragmatic perspective. That's another approach. You could also consider this idea of breaking rules or disobeying orders from a social justice perspective, that you actually have a moral obligation to disobey those unjust orders, right? If you genuinely receive an order that you think of as unjust, it's not just that you have a moral obligation to obey the orders and you're violating a moral principle in disobeying the orders. You actually have a moral obligation to disobey the order, because that's what promotes the social justice principle that you see in the situation at hand. So that's a third option we haven't really talked about, that you actually do have a moral obligation to disobey the orders in certain situations. Mm. So that's option number three, this sort of social justice perspective that the overriding factor is justice, that if you receive an unjust order, you have a moral obligation to pursue the course of justice, regardless of the chain of command. But I think you could take a fourth perspective on this. This occurred to me before we started recording the show. I would call this something like a civil disobedience perspective, that in certain situations, maybe you can think of this as a subspecies of the social justice perspective. On this view, if you choose to disobey the orders of your superior officers, you have to be willing to live with the consequences of that. And I think that's part of civil disobedience, right? If you disobey society's rules to shed light on an injustice or to achieve a certain end, you're well within your rights to do that, but you have to accept the consequences of that. That means you might end up in jail. You might end up paying a fine, you know, these various consequences that come with violating the rules of a society. So if you look through examples of Star Trek, like, you know, Captain Kirk stealing the Enterprise, he has to be willing to accept the consequence of disobeying the rules, right? And one of the consequences, of course, is being demoted from admiral down to captain. And after choosing to violate the rules, if you're going to generally accept the structure of a society and of this hierarchy, if you're not going to reject the social hierarchy, if you're not going to reject the chain of command outright, if you violate those rules for principle or for loyalty or for any of the other justifications that we mentioned, one of the consequences is, well, there are going to be consequences. You might have to serve time in the brig. You might lose your commission. You might get demoted. And that's part of choosing to disobey the rules in an organized society like Starfleet.
And we see that happen again to Tom Paris in 30 days. He's demoted. He spends 30 days in the brig. But I don't think that anyone is going to demote Jean-Luc Picard or take any other action against him when he gets back from Earth after saving humanity from the Borg.
Yeah, it's not likely that we're going to see Commander Picard again.
No, indeed.
Although it's fun to think about what would happen if, like, Harry Kim chose to disobey an order. You know, would they demote him to crewman? Would they take away his lone pick?
Crewman first class.
Poor
Chief,
Harry.
Chief Petty Officer Harry Kim.
Transporter Chief. Chief Kim.
Chief Kim.
But I think this is an important part of it, that if you choose to break the rules, certainly humans have free will. They can obey a rule or not obey a rule. They can follow orders or not follow orders. But there are going to be consequences in an organized society like the Federation or like Starfleet. Mm-hmm. If you choose to disobey the rules, you can't do that expecting there not to be any consequences. And many times in the Star Trek universe, we see officers violating the rules without much in the way of consequences. Right. At best, they get a reprimand on their record, because usually what happens is that they break a rule and the situation turns out okay and there's no really bad consequences. Maybe they save Earth or save the world, or maybe they, you know, save a bunch of lives. And so they've disobeyed orders, they get a little reprimand on their record, and then by the next episode, they're back to day-to-day life. It's fun to see the situations where there's an actual consequence. And I think that's why I keep going back to the Captain Kirk example, because he has an actual consequence. He gets demoted from admiral back down to captain. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing for Captain Kirk. And we're all cheer when we kind of see that moment.
Yeah, I mean, you're, but that's a real consequence. Basically, gave him what he wanted.
That's a huge reduction in rank, though. That's an actual consequence inside the Star Trek universe, and we don't see that very often.
But again, I think that's one of the reasons why I like the episode 30 Days so much. And for that matter, it's one of the things that I appreciate really about the next year of Voyager, because we get to see Tom Paris have to earn it back. This isn't a dressing down at the end of the episode, followed by a pat on the back, and then next week everything's... I mean, we didn't come back to the next episode and find that pip back on his collar. He spent a year earning it back. And I have to just say, you know, props to Voyager for showing that. They had the episode 30 days. He loses the pip. He gets the dressing down. They throw him in the brig. The entire episode is watching him suffer, really, in the brig by himself in seclusion, writing a letter to his father, having to think about his actions, whether they were right or wrong. And at the end of the day, he comes to the conclusion that I did the right thing and I'm paying the price for it and I'm okay with that. And I have to appreciate that. But then we get to see how that affects him, not just for an episode or two episodes, but a year from now, we come back to seeing him reinstated as a lieutenant, and we get to follow that journey. And again, props to Voyager for letting us take that journey with him. I think that's one of the best examples of disobedience followed by real consequences, followed by redemption.
And that right there, to put my Voyager hat on and my To the Journey co-host hat on, is an example of Voyager not using the magic reset button and having actual consequences inside.
Absolutely.
Voyager. I think, Mike, it's hard to know where to go from here in the conversation, because we can do a few things. We can keep coming up with examples in Star Trek of officers who violate the chain of command and disobey their orders. And I think if we really dug deeply, we could find a few more examples.
And Zachary, I should say that we can throw that to our listeners. I would love to continue this conversation on the Babel Conference. Listeners, give us some examples. Let's talk about those. You know, what were the motivations? Where do they fit, you know, in these examples that we've given of disobeying orders? Share some examples that you've thought of that perhaps we didn't mention, and let's continue that conversation.
Yeah, in general, we want to remind everyone that we don't have the final word on any of these issues. We really want to start the discussion, and we want to hear your feedback and your thoughts. And we don't think of ourselves as having the final word on any of these issues. At best, we're kind of laying the foundation for a future discussion and giving some options for different ways of cutting up this dilemma. We don't have an actual answer to any of these issues that we've been talking about here today. We're trying to structure the conversation and provide some philosophical options and maybe give you some food for thought about how to think about these situations that you see in the Star Trek universe, but it's not like we have figured out how to resolve these conflicting intuitions ourselves.
Indeed.
But the second useful thing we can do is we've tried to do, which is try to give a taxonomy or a classification of different categories of rule breaking. What are the different motivations? What are the different scenarios where this comes up? And see if they have equal philosophical weight, or if some of them carry more moral or ethical force than others. Things like, you know, breaking orders out of friendship and loyalty. Things like breaking orders because of a moral conviction. Things like breaking orders because you have a conflicting loyalty somewhere else. And we've tried to give something of a classification or a taxonomy of these different kinds of examples in our discussion here. And finally, I think the last and most philosophically useful thing we can do is to try to give different justifications for the chain of command in general, right? If the chain of command doesn't have any sort of force to it, any sort of obligation, then the whole discussion is moot, right? There's no question of whether it's morally right or wrong to disobey orders if the orders themselves don't carry any moral force. So in my mind, the fundamental question is, what account can we give of the justification for a chain of command or a hierarchy or a social order that allows enough flexibility for this pragmatic violation of the rules in particular situations, but not devolving into anarchy or not devolving into chaos, keeping the orderliness of a chain of command, recognizing that most of the time leads to our shared goals, things like stability, things like exploration, things like military security, but not letting that hierarchy be so rigid in this Kantian sense that it doesn't allow for exceptions or doesn't allow for individual officers to follow their conscience or to recognize that the orders they're receiving may be immoral or unjust in some way. And so how do you achieve that pragmatic middle ground of saying that most of the time the orders have this sense of obligation, that you have an obligation to obey your orders most of the time? It's that in parentheses, most of the time, right? It's this philosophical hand waving that's going on. Most of the time you've got this obligation. Well, why do you have an obligation in the first place? And if you have an obligation in the first place, why don't you have an obligation all of the time? How do you allow just enough wiggle room to where you maintain the benefits of a social order while allowing flexibility for these cases where the social order or the command hierarchy doesn't make sense or is unjust in some way? And the best I can come up with is this pragmatic justification that 9 times out of 10, the hierarchy serves a pragmatic value. And that 1 time out of 10 or 1 time out of 100, when it doesn't serve that pragmatic value anymore, those are in situations where the orders seem obviously unjust or lead to consequences that aren't in our society's best interest. And I think that's the best I can come up with. I think if you go full on Kantian, you can say, look, orders or the command structure has such rigidity and such obligation to it that it doesn't allow for any exceptions. And I think that's overly rigid, right? I don't think you want that. I don't think Starfleet even wants that. Captain Picard basically says Starfleet doesn't want people who blindly follow orders. And we get that in universe. But we don't want to undermine the chain of command so much that whenever a higher ranking officer gives an order, the subordinate can just say, oh, I don't feel like following that order today. Right? So it should have some sort of obligation to it. And then the question is, well, why does it have an obligation? Is it an obligation for pragmatic reasons? Is it an obligation because it's a social contract and you agreed to serve a certain function? Why does it have any obligation at all? And how do you just find that middle ground between having just enough obligation to maintain the chain of command, but not so much obligation that it becomes rigid and inflexible and people don't have the ability to follow their orders intelligently versus blindly following their orders? So again, I don't have a real answer to this, but I think the pragmatic justification is probably the best I can come up with for finding that middle ground.
Well, Zachary, we kind of gave a hand wave to it, but I had mentioned earlier in the podcast Starfleet Regulation 3, in paragraph 12, again, which authorizes captains to take any justifiable action to preserve the lives of their crew when threatened with imminent destruction. And again, we get that regulation quoted in Voyager, the episode Equinox. Now, Captain Ransom used that to justify some very immoral actions that his crew took that were hostile towards an alien species. And Janeway calls him on it. But is this a common regulation? It gets quoted at, I'm thinking of, court-martial hearings where captains are having to justify these actions that they took that were in defiance of their orders. Is this something common? Now, we're very, very fortunate to have among our many, many listeners and affiliated with our network some people who have served in our military, and we're so thankful for your service, those of you out there. I think of Ken Tripp, one of our fellow hosts here on the network, and Jeff Harlan, who is a friend of the network. I think of Richard Marquez, our production manager, who have all served in the military. I'd be interested to know if there are any similar regulations that exist in our military code, but it seems to me that's the easy out for a captain in a court-martial situation. But again, I think we have to be careful because, Ransom was certainly able to at least twist that to justify his own immoral actions.
I'm so glad you thought to mention the concept of a court-martial, because built into the structure of a chain of command in the Star Trek universe, in Starfleet, is this system of a court-martial or inquiries, right? So yeah, any officer has the ability to say, I think these orders are wrong. I'm going to take a stand. I'm going to choose to disobey orders. And that will lead to certain consequences. And when that happens, without fail, there will be an inquiry and maybe a court-martial, right? And that's the chance to justify the actions, right? So if Captain Ransom were court-martialed, I think likely, if there were an inquiry into what he did in Equinox, likely they would say, sorry, that's not a good justification. You're misusing that principle to justify what you're doing there. That's a misuse of that principle, that you can take whatever actions are necessary in an extreme circumstance. You know, Captain Ransom would say, look, this is an extreme circumstance. We're in facing imminent destruction, so I can do whatever is necessary, right? If this came to an inquiry, they would say, no, you're actually misusing that principle. And so you're probably going to be court-martialed, right? So, but built into the system is this way of investigating whether a violation of an order was justified or not. So it's not like there's a chain of command, and then if you violate the order, you just, boom, you're out of Starfleet, or boom, there are these bad consequences. It'll be like, okay, someone violated an order. Maybe it led to good consequences. Maybe it led to disastrous consequences. But at very least, there would be an inquiry. And if it were worse than that, it might be a court-martial. And I think the term court-martial is probably misused a bit, right? A court-martial it's a trial, but it doesn't mean like they're kicking you right off, exactly. Right out of Starfleet immediately. It's a trial, right, essentially. So, yeah, you're going to stand a military trial, and there'll be an inquiry, and you'll give a chance to justify what you did, and maybe the facts are in your favor, and you've made the right judgment call. But there is this kind of pragmatic checks and balances with having the I mean, it's this brute force fact of human nature. We have the ability to break the rules when we want to. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to violate orders. So then you know, if you choose to do that, there are going to be consequences, and one of which is going to be an inquiry or a court-martial, and that's your chance to explain your actions, explain your justification, explain your reasoning, and maybe you really are in the right from the perspective of the chain of command after all. And so court-martial, I think, is kind of this dirty word that has more of a negative connotation than it probably should have. It's a trial. It's an inquiry. It's a chance to explain your reasoning and your rationale and your justification. But I think it's important not to forget that there is this system inside Starfleet of investigating violations of protocol and investigating violations of the chain of command through a formalized process. So it's not like if you violate a rule once, you're immediately out of Starfleet.
Yeah, and we bring that up from time to time. As I recall, Beverly Crusher, this was mentioned to her when she defied the captain's orders and performed an autopsy when she was ordered not to. And she was told, you know, there's going to be an inquiry. There's going to be an investigation. You're going to have to answer for your actions. And so we can't really overlook this system inside the Star Trek universe, but it seems more often than not that, we wave a hand to these actions and, you know, in the next episode, we hit the reset button and things are all well and good.
I think this is what I like so much about that final scene in Star Trek IV when Captain Kirk, you know, faces an inquiry and he gets to face the actual consequences and he gets to kind of account for his actions. And it all wraps up very neatly, of course. And, you know, Admiral Kirk becomes Captain Kirk again. But I also am reminded of, we talked about the Pegasus earlier from Star Trek The Next Generation, at the final scene of that episode where Captain Picard is talking to Riker, who's been sent to the brig. And he's basically explaining, look, there's going to be an inquiry and there's going to be some hard questions. You've made some choices that are maybe not the best, but at the end of the day, you did what was right. You followed your convictions. You told the truth when it mattered the most. So it's going to be okay at the end of the day. And you know, I'd still be honored to have you as my first officer. But this idea that, look, you know, yeah, you can violate your orders or you can violate a treaty or whatnot. Any human has the ability to break those rules as they see fit. But there's going to be consequences. There's going to be an inquiry. At very least, there'll be an inquiry and there might be consequences. But I just like the fact that there's a discussion about those things, because it's not like, even though we don't really get to see it, the implication is not like, you know, you're off scot-free by the next episode. Yeah, on screen by the next episode, we don't see any consequences. But I just like the idea that when you choose those actions, there are going to be hard questions to answer. And that's life, isn't it? If you choose to violate the rules, there's going to be some hard questions to answer. And that's uncomfortable for everyone. But it's not like you get off scot-free. And I just like that Star Trek does take a few chances to drive that point home.
Yeah, it's a shame that the actual last lines to the Pegasus ended up on the cutting room floor. When Riker was walking out of Picard's ready room, he scratched his head and he said, thank goodness for that NX-01 holodeck program.
What would we do if we couldn't act out our dilemmas on a holodeck, right?
It just ended up on the cutting room floor.
What's funny, though, is I think we do that with Star Trek, right? When I'm facing a dilemma, oftentimes I can actually immerse myself in a similar example inside Star Trek and kind of reason my way out of it because those examples have been brought to life on screen. So there is something to immersing yourself in a fictional environment to help you resolve your dilemmas. I know I've done that personally a few times.
And again, that would be a great conversation to have with other Star Trek fans in which we could share times in which Star Trek has... helped us make a hard decision or correct us when we've, you know, made the wrong call. I'd be curious to hear about those as well.
I'd be curious if there are any examples where the fact that someone in the Star Trek universe has violated an order, you know, Kirk violating an order, or Picard violating an order, has that given anyone the confidence to violate a rule or violate an order or go against the grain in some way on a matter of principle? And it was Star Trek that gave you the confidence to follow that conviction.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happening at a real court-martial hearing in a military court.
But it was good enough for Picard. Picard did it.
Your Honor, I would just like to cite Star Trek III, which Kirk steals the Enterprise.
I love the idea that you could actually cite Star Trek episodes as legal precedent. That would be awesome.
I would be in favor of it.
Yeah, rather than citing... rather than citing Supreme Court decisions, you cite captain's logs.
I would be in favor of that. Well, Zachary, it's been fun talking about disobeying orders today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look, everyone, at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, to the journey!
I'm a little worried that B'Elanna didn't care enough about Chakotay to try any Klingon medicine on him.
What would it be? Just blood wine?
Klingon bloodletting? I don't know.
Percussive maintenance.
A nice warm bowl of gach.
To the face.
Klingon chicken soup.
Or even banana pancakes.
Prune juice. A warrior's prune.
Chakotay, have a bite of a heart of targ and wash it down with some prune juice.
Warp 5.
Well, they decided to come out with something called the 1701 line, which is always cute. Retailers always want to do 1701, or they make the price $17.01, and that's real cute, except when you have 100,000 people who want a figure and you're only releasing 1701 of that figure, you're disappointing a lot of completists.
Literary Treks.
But still, at the same time, you're left with that what if, you know? And I know that, like, the Parallels episode gives you a couple of brief glimpses of Riker in command after Picard is dead, and it doesn't seem to be going well for Mr. Riker at that point.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
He has worked with Robert Rodriguez. He was Rodriguez's cinematographer before Rodriguez started shooting his own movies, having worked with him on From Dusk Till Dawn, not the TV show From Dusk Till Dawn, the original masterpiece.
That's always where we go right off the rails. So you throw in the word masterpiece right there.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find all our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can always stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. And Zachary, we want to mention two new ways that our listeners can catch all our podcasts here at Trek FM, and that is through Google Play and also streaming over on YouTube.
We always want to make sure that our Trek FM podcasts are as available and as easy to find as possible, so we're always trying to find ways to get our podcasts out to you anywhere you can get your podcasts.
Another way, listeners, you can always help us keep our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's P-A-T-R-E-O-N patreon.com/trekfm. You'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks that we have for you. These perks include things like early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and many, many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS Enterprise orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can help make it happen. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, or to send us your thoughts on anything we discussed in this episode of MetaTreks, you can contact us in several different ways. You can contact us via a form. Just go to trek.fm/contact.
If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar in our MetaTreks show page on the Trek FM website, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm.
You can find us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @trekfm.
On Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're on Facebook, find us in the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type The Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar.
We'd also like to encourage you to leave a rating and a review of MetaTreks on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, Zachary, when you're not spending 30 days in the brig, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around Trek FM?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network as co-host of To the Journey, Trek FM's dedicated Voyager podcast with my co-hosts there, Kay Shaw and Suzanne Williamson. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, @ZacharyFruling. And you can find me in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Star Trek and philosophy with me there. And Mike, how about you? When you're not seeking legal counsel for your impending court-martial, where can people find you on the Trek FM network and around the interwebs?
Well, Zachary, I'm always around Facebook. That's where I'm most active. I'm certainly around the Babel Conference from time to time. On Twitter, my handle is @cmichael1701. I'm also on Instagram, cmichael1701. Also, Zachary, I recently finished writing a novel, and if you're interested in reading my thoughts on that process or about life, you can catch my blog at cmichael1701.wordpress.com. Around the network, I can be found on recent episodes of Warp 5 and The Ready Room. Well, Zachary, we'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the MetaTreks team from around the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, founder and publisher of Trek FM, who never gives bad orders. Also, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. Our Patreon manager, Brandon Shea Mutala. We'd also like to give a special shout out to our associate producers, Patrick Devlin. You can connect with Patrick on Twitter @MagicDrop5. Kay Shaw, also on Twitter @ChocoWeeble. Our friend Norm Lau, you can catch him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @Starfighter1701. And Kit Lofstadt, her Twitter handle is @MotherCat. That's mother with a zero. We want to thank you for all that you do to help keep dilithium in the chamber here on MetaTreks and around the network. Well, thanks everyone for listening to MetaTreks, a Star Trek and philosophy podcast. Until next time, when we will once again boldly go where no philosophers have gone before.